I'm speaking with Michelle Vollespuhl from the University of Gothenburg. Her work explores names and naming laws in historical contexts. Here she shares her perspective on the ways her work can reduce present-day conflict in Europe. Hi, Michelle. It's great to be talking with you. Would you introduce yourself?
Yes, I teach at the, my name is Michelle Vollespuhl, and I teach at the University of Gothenburg. I'm a German linguist. My research interests are mainly in historical sociolinguistics, with a focus on multilingualism and language contact, and also grapholinguistics, so the linguistics of writing. It's another research interest. And both interests I combine right now in the material of historical personal names. And in another project, I work on historical cryptology, so historical ciphers. I work on names. So in the project I will present, or I work with here in the Hilt, I have a focus on names. And historical linguistic research so far has mainly had a focus on etymology of names, you know, the name forms. But names are so much more than just form. They identify people, they individualize people or places, but they also have a range of other social symbolics dimension as well. So if you say your name, people have associations where you come from, for instance, or also in what social context you live and so on. So names are very important for people's identity.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, would you be willing to share an example of something that you're looking at?
I mean, the conflict, maybe I can also mention the conflict that I identified, the modern day conflict. And you probably also have, many of us have met in multilingual contexts that if you say your name, for instance, that in another country or wherever, where people speak another language, they don't understand the name, for instance, they have difficulties pronouncing it. Another issue that is important when it comes to personal names and also place names, that they are subject to national laws. So this is one of the conflicts. So imagine if you immigrate to another country where there are other name laws. For instance, one example I can give you from a modern day Swedish context is that a Somali family that immigrated to Sweden in Somalia and other Eastern African countries, the naming system is different. So you have a first name, then you have your father's name, and then usually also your grandfather's name. So this embeds you in a clan context. But when you come to Sweden, you have another name, if you have fixed family names. So you have to get registered in this new system. This opens all sorts of conflicts. So people have to cut the tradition of their homeland, the naming tradition, which can cause status conflicts as well. But also, what kind of names should you choose when you move to another country for your children? Shall you choose a name that is traditional and also shows your ethnic or religious or linguistic roots, or should you adapt to the new context? So these are some kind of conflicts that we can find in modern day contexts with regards to multilingualism.
You've mentioned Sweden as a place where this is happening. To what extent do you see this as a broader phenomenon? Is this limited to Sweden, or does this occur in other national and cultural contexts?
Every country has its name law, and these laws are not internationally compatible. All the people who move to another country will encounter some kind of problems. I can give you another case in Switzerland, where in the 90s, a lot of immigrants came to Switzerland from the former Yugoslavia. And then there were some letters that was not part of the letter list that was allowed. So all these people lost a part of their name, name spelling. We also know that this can be part or important to people and their identity. So imagine all these people have changed name because the pronunciation is different from these two letters in these names. Luckily, there we have a solution right now, because there was a, do you call it resolution, of a parliamentarian. And now we have a change in the list of letters allowed, but this is only took like 10 years to change this.
Wow, so there actually is a change in the orthography that's available.
There are possibilities, but they're long processes.
The examples that you've shared are from relatively modern day data sets. Yes. How is this similar or different from the situation in the past?
My historical sociolinguistic work, or my historical work on names, is so far really case based, and I'm trying to find cases both on an individual level, so where people move and migrate to different countries and see what happens to their names. I can give you an example from the 18th century. It was a researcher and traveler at that time, Johann Ludwig Burckhardt, so from Switzerland. And the interesting thing is now I give you this name in German, because this is how he's known most widely. But he was actually born in Lausanne, so this is in the French-speaking part of Switzerland. And when his name first got registered, this was in French. And his name was then Jean-Louis Conrad Guillaume Burckhardt. After a while, the family moved to Basel, and this is in the German-speaking part of Switzerland. And there we have another entry in his baptism register, and there you have a translation into German. It's the same name, but Johann Ludwig Conrad Wilhelm Burckhardt. And then this person, during his lifetime, moved to England as well. And there he is known as John Louis Burckhardt. He adapted his name. And then later on, he also traveled to the Arabic part of the world. He also learned Arabic, and then he died. And there he changed his name. And also on his death certificate, we'll find the name Sheikh Ibrahim Ibn Abdallah. So this is a really fascinating example, I find, where we see a person that in different life stages, he had different names in the different, and also always adapted to the cultures and languages where he lived.
Are you tracing these primarily through the registers, the baptism registers, the official civic documents?
Yes.
So it's very much about how the cultural context he's moving into names him, as well as how he names himself. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. That's how he names himself.
As individuals and families and cultures negotiate naming in this way and impose or adopt different names, how does that create conflict?
On the individual level, I haven't found so much conflict in these name changes in the historical cases. The same from another multilingual context in the former Russian Empire, where people living in a multilingual area with Lithuanian, Polish, German, and Russian, they use their names a bit like, it doesn't even seem to have a variable out there. They just used once the name in Polish, once they spelled it in German, and so on. The same person, even in the same document. So there seem to be a bit more fluid linguistic borders when it comes to the names with these individuals that were multilingual. Also today we find these fluid borders in the use of names of individuals. In my home context, I pronounce my name with an accent on the first syllable, so Michel. But here in Sweden and Scandinavian or even English context, nobody calls me like this. It's always on the second syllable, Michelle. And this is not a problem for me. I just adapt, or other people, like being Francesco and coming to a even English speak context, who maybe call it themselves Francis. No, I mean, the conflict is rather when you have an institutional framework and law that individuals have to fit in. And we can also find that in historical cases. One example is, and this is not my own research now, I refer to a historian's research, that the historian is called Agaston Berends. He did his research on 19th century Hungary, and you know, when national ideologies were linked to linguistics and languages as well, and the Hungarian Empire decided that Hungarian has to be the language for all the different places in the whole empire, and even there were other languages. For instance, Romanian were spoken by the majority of the population in these regions. And then also personal names were adapted. And then, of course, these were forced adaptations, which can have impact to the people's identity. And these are maybe the cases that could be compared to modern day name laws, where we have where people are forced into this adaptation.
It's amazingly complex that in some ways it sounds like situation in the context hasn't changed, in that individuals have to rename themselves, or names are imposed, or they are required to rename, but the meanings have changed behind it, and the fluidities have changed. The fluidities mm-hmm. have changed. That sounds incredibly complex. There's the example of a national law being modified to allow characters that aren't normally part of that language's orthography as a solution to reduce this conflict. What other sorts of opportunities do you see to reduce conflict?
One principal thing is to raise awareness what names are and what names mean to people. And this is a general question. And they raise awareness not just generally in the society, but also with authorities. The historical perspective can inform about conflicts that were, possible solutions that have been, or also actions that have been taken. We can also show actions that have been taken that haven't led to solutions, but more conflict. This is one of my aims here, to outline possible factors that lead to conflict and have led to conflict, but also to case-based show what kind of solutions are possible and maybe what others not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what sorts of misunderstandings do you encounter as you're dealing with these data sets and thinking about them in historical and in modern contexts?
Modern day laws are very strongly bound to the concept of a national language and a national standardized language as well. And there is little space for variation in many countries. But in the case of Switzerland, we have seen that with the spelling, that there was a letter that was not part of these national languages. It was not possible to get a name outside of this frame registered. And the other misunderstanding is that a person and the name are bound together during a whole life, so that there is also little fluidity in how a person names him, hers, their self.
This seems like very unique work, very important work, and different work from what a lot of us as linguists might think about. Can you talk to why you've begun exploring this area and why this is important, and what sort of role this suggests that linguists might have in discussions about policy?
Linguists in general, but especially sociolinguists as well, that highlight what language, and in this case names, what they mean for people also as a society, of course. I mean, my work with names started with a project on a bunch of Scandinavian names from the Middle Ages. So it's like 700, I worked with 700 names from the Middle Ages that were Scandinavian names that were recorded by a German scribe in a monastery in Reichenau. And there I saw, I mean, there was adaptations and freely, some are really, really not freely adapted, but they heard the names and then they just wrote them as they heard them. And they look, of course, pretty different from what we find in Scandinavian sources. And then I started my research on these aspects of language contact and cultural contact and the significance of names in these contexts. And I also found that there is very little research on names and multilingualism. How do names work? Yeah, in the society, in multilingual societies. And then talking to people and being involved in myself in a multilingual context with a name from another language region, I meet problems not every day, but this is something I also encounter in my daily life, and this is also something I hear other people discussing, choosing a name for a child, whatever, a culturally mixed couple having children. This is a big issue, and there is not a lot of research on that yet, and I think it's our role, yeah, to raise awareness.
It's important and fascinating work, and so interested to see how it continues to develop. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you too.